Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
So if you're looking for a really swift but deeply unsettling look at, well, the cost of artistic perfection, maybe the disaster of repression, and, you know, why sometimes absolute beauty can be, well, utterly fatal, you're definitely in the right place today.
Absolutely. We're doing a deep dive into Thomas Mann's 1912 masterpiece, Death in Venice. Der Tod in Venedig.
Such a powerful novella.
It really is. You know, it's essential reading if you want to understand 20th century literature. A man who later won the Nobel Prize wasn't just telling a story here. He was kind of dissecting the European soul right on the cusp of World War I.
Okay. So what's our mission today? What are we tracing?
Well, our goal is really to follow the catastrophic fall of Gustav von Aschenbach. This is a man, a writer, who dedicated his entire life to discipline, to order. And we see what happens when he's finally confronted by something raw, untamed, passion.
And to really get the scale of that fall, that failure, we need to start with the foundation man sets up, right? This tension.
Yeah.
You always mention it in Mann's work. It's that Nietzschean thing, Apollonian versus Dionysian.
That's it. That's the core lens. Absolutely. Aschenbach begins as like the ultimate Apollonian figure. Order, reason, discipline, form, all of that. He's the hyperachiever governing his life with this iron grip. He thinks genius has to be built on stern self-denial.
Sacrificing instinct for structure.
Exactly. And the Dionysian is everything he's pushed down. Chaos, instinct, ecstasy, abandon. It's all the messy stuff. And this whole story, really, it's about the violent eruption of the Dionysian, just shattering the Apollonian facade he'd so carefully built.
Okay, let's meet the man himself then. Gustav von Aschenbach.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrated German writer, maybe in his 50s, known for these works of moral fortitude, ascetic devotion to his craft. He sounds admirable in a very stern way.
He's the archetype, isn't he? The disciplined mind. Praise to control, consistency. He spent his life basically repressing the natural man, prioritizing this kind of intellectual coldness.
But that comes at a cost.
A huge psychic cost, yeah.
Mm.
When the story opens, he's not just tired. He is spiritually empty. He's facing profound creative block, just deep exhaustion and this feeling of hollowness. It's the burnout crisis of a life lived under too much control.
And that exhaustion, that emptiness, makes him vulnerable. So what's the first crack? What actually pushes him off course? The inciting incident.
Ah, it's such a perfect symbolic opening. He's walking near a cemetery in Munich. Note the location, the cemetery. And he sees this mysterious foreign-looking man, a figure of the unknown, the exotic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, significantly linked to death right from the start.
Just a random encounter.
Seems like it, but this chance meeting just triggers this inexplicable, totally overwhelming urge to travel for freedom, for the unknown, for everything outside his tidy, respectable world. It's like his instinctual self suddenly just roars to life, demanding release.
And that impulse sends him south, towards Italy. He tries a few places first, doesn't he? Looking for something clean, orderly.
He does, but somehow he ends up heading for Venice, the humid, sinking, beautiful, decaying Venice.
And even before he gets there, man just loads the journey with these really unsettling signs, these harbingers of decay, you call them. It signals this trip is doomed from the start.
The atmosphere is immediately just thick with dread. The first really grotesque warning is the elderly fop on the ship, this older man trying desperately to look young.
Oh, that scene is horrifying.
It is. Makeup literally dripping in the heat, false teeth, dyed hair.
Yeah.
Just this agonizing parody of youth. Aschenbach is deeply repulsed by him.
Naturally.
But yeah, he's basically staring at a preview of his own eventual collapse, the very thing he'll become. It's chilling foreshadowing.
It's so uncomfortable. You almost feel embarrassed for Aschenbach watching it. And then he arrives in Venice, and the first local he meets is just as ominous, right? The unlicensed gondolier.
Yeah, this brutish, vaguely menacing guy takes Aschenbach where he wants to go against Aschenbach's wishes in this black... Well, it's described like a coffin, isn't it? The gondola.
A coffin on the water.
Exactly. It's an unmissable symbol, a vessel of death. And the gondolier himself is lawless, vanishes without payment. He represents those uncontrollable forces now taking charge of Aschenbach's life, rowing him towards his fate. Aschenbach's Apollonian authority means nothing here.
And Venice itself, it's not just a backdrop, is it? It feels like a character mirroring what's happening inside Aschenbach.
Perfectly put. Venice is that dangerous duality. Sublime beauty, you know, Renaissance art, history.
Yeah.
But it's built on water. It's literally sinking, decaying, struggling. It's corruption under this elegant, beautiful surface.
So the city's beauty is tied up with its own death, just like Aschenbach's fascination is leading him towards his.
Precisely. The setting and the soul reflect each other.
And amidst all this oppressive beauty, this decay, the pivotal moment happens. Aschenbach sees Tadzio, the 14-year-old Polish boy. And the way man describes him is crucial, isn't it? It's all classical sculpture, myth.
Yes, otherworldly beauty. He doesn't see a real boy, not initially. He sees, like, the platonic ideal made flesh, a living statue.
And that initial aesthetic appreciation, it doesn't stay aesthetic for long, does it?
Not at all. That's the tragic turn. He tries to keep it intellectual, you know, viewing Tadzio as an object of beauty, something to be studied, like art. But that cold Apollonian distance just, it melts away almost instantly. It curdles.
Into what?
Into obsession, a destructive passion. His rigidly structured days, they just disappear. His entire existence becomes structured around chances to just watch the boy, stalking him, basically.
A silent, desperate fixation. But what's fascinating, and maybe horrifying, is how he justifies this to himself. He doesn't just give in, he rationalizes it.
Oh, it's a masterclass in self-deception. Really devastating. He pulls out all his intellectual defenses. He starts thinking about Plato, specifically the Phaedrus, those Socratic dialogues about beauty and love.
Right, the idea that contemplating physical beauty can lead the soul upwards towards wisdom.
Exactly. He tries to use that high philosophy to argue that just gazing upon Tadzio's perfect form is like a noble intellectual pursuit that will elevate his spirit.
So he's using his greatest strength, his Apollonian intellect,
to justify a Dionysian failure. Yes, it's a catastrophic misreading. Instead of finding wisdom, he uses his intellect to pave the way for his own moral degradation.
And it's all in his head, isn't it? Man makes that clear.
Crucially, yes. The entire relationship, if you can call it that, unfolds in Aschenbach's consciousness. They never exchange more than brief glances and tentative smiles. Tadzio remains this distant, unreachable fantasy, which only makes Aschenbach's obsession more feverish, more internal.
And while Aschenbach is sort of decaying psychologically, the city itself is literally sickening around him.
Yes. The outside world mirrors the inner state again. Tourists start leaving. There's this smell of antiseptic disinfectant everywhere. It's the mounting evidence of the cholera epidemic.
Which the authorities are trying to hush up.
Desperately. To protect the tourist economy, you know. The hidden plague becomes this perfect metaphor for the sickness festering in Aschenbach's soul, the corruption he won't acknowledge.
And the moment he confirms the plague is real, learns the deadly truth behind the beautiful facade, that's his big moral test, isn't it?
His ultimate clear moral choice. Yes. He knows about the cholera. He knows Tadzio and his family are in danger.
He could warn them, save them, potentially.
Yeah.
But that would mean Tadzio leaves Venice.
And his obsession would end. His choice. His choice to remain silent, prioritizing his selfish, desperate need to keep watching the boy over their actual safety, that marks his complete moral collapse.
He throws away a lifetime of supposed moral dignity.
For the pathetic chance to observe Tadzio for maybe a few more days, impulse completely overrides integrity. It's the point of no return.
And once that moral dam breaks, the rest follows quickly. The physical and psychological breakdown accelerates. He has that terrifying dream.
The dream, yes. This chaotic, animalistic Dionysian orgy. It's the full eruption of everything he repressed, breaking through into his conscious mind. No more control.
And then, the final surrender, the physical transformation.
It's just pathetic, isn't it? He dyes his hair, uses cosmetics, rouge. He becomes a grotesque parody of himself. He becomes the very elderly fop he despised on the boat journey.
Trying to paint youth onto himself?
Yeah, and this utterly futile attempt to make himself maybe worthy or perhaps just visible to the ideal beauty he's chasing, it's heartbreakingly misguided.
His last conscious act is basically pursuing Tadzio through these maze-like, plague-ridden streets, this humiliating chase, until he loses him and finally realizes
the impossibility, the futility of it all. The repressed passion has consumed him utterly, leaving him spent, broken.
So stepping back from the narrative,
yeah,
what's the core message here? If there's one core message.
I think it comes down to the destructive power of absolute beauty, especially when it's detached from morality. Man seems to suggest, maybe through that famous quote, "He who has gazed on beauty is already dedicated to death."
Beauty as a fatal force?
When it becomes an end in itself, yes.
Yeah.
An amoral destructive force. It leads directly to Aschenbach's literal death from cholera, but also his spiritual death long before that.
It also feels like a deep dive into the artist's dilemma, doesn't it? challenging that romantic ideal of the pure, disciplined creator.
Definitely. That other quote you mentioned, "It is good that the world knows only the lovely work and not its origins," that really hits hard here. Man explores that dangerous territory where the artist's quest for the ideal gets tangled up with, well, forbidden human desires.
We admire the finished product, the Apollonian work.
But we're shielded from the messy, perhaps morally compromised Dionysian struggle that might have gone into creating it.
And the way man tells this story, the narrative technique itself is quite something. Third person, but totally locked inside Aschenbach's head.
Yes, it's incredibly sophisticated, third-person omniscient, but tightly focalized through Aschenbach's deteriorating viewpoint. And that creates this brilliant, unsettling, dramatic irony.
Oh, so.
Well, we, the readers, are trapped in his head. We hear all his high-minded philosophical justifications for his stalking, his inaction. But at the same time, we see the sordid, pathetic, pathetic reality of what he's actually doing. His moral compromise is laid bare even as he tries to rationalize it away.
So we're forced to judge him, even while we're experiencing his own self-deception. It's deeply uncomfortable.
Exactly. It makes the reader complicit, almost, yeah, in witnessing his downfall from the inside.
And the story ends with that unforgettable image on the beach. Aschenbach dying, watching Tadzio, who, in Aschenbach's final vision, gestures out to sea.
Yes, Tadzio becomes, in that dying fantasy, a symbolic figure, Hermes Psychopompos.
The guide of souls to the underworld.
Right. In Greek myth, Hermes guides souls to Hades. So in his very last moments, Aschenbach elevates his obsession to this mythical, transcendent level. Tadzio becomes his spiritual guide. Though whether that's a final moment of twisted grace or just his ultimate delusion, man leaves that beautifully, chillingly ambiguous.
You know, what really stays with me is how man takes this crisis of one very controlled, maybe repressed individual and makes it feel like a commentary on a whole culture, maybe even on human nature. It really challenges how much of our morality or dignity is just performance.
I agree. It forces you to question whether relentlessly suppressing our instincts, our Dionysian side, in the name of order and achievement is ultimately sustainable, or if it's just self-destructive. Aschenbach's tragedy suggests those chaotic forces don't just vanish. They lie dormant, waiting for the facade to crack.
A chilling thought to end on.
Indeed.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.